Well, we're going to find out what constitutes a livable city. There apparently there are a few factors that make a city very inviting to live in versus not so inviting to live in. And a senior research fellow from RMIT, Dr. Jonathan Arundel, joins us. Good morning, Jonathan. A lot of things go into our minds when it comes to thinking of a city as being livable. What are some of those factors?
Good morning, Mark. Well, we've actually defined livability in our work, and what we are looking at there is a number of different domains coming together. So our definition of livability is a city that is safe, socially cohesive and inclusive, it's environmentally sustainable, it's got affordable, diverse public housing linked via public transport, walking, cycling infrastructure, to employment, to public open space, local shops, health and community services, and leisure and cultural opportunities. So it's a very multifaceted definition of livability, but hopefully with this, you know, we tick all the boxes for the people who live in those cities as to the things that they need in their lives.
Yeah, like you just said, pretty much everything that goes into making up a life. The big one, of course, affordability, which you have to say that, John, most of our big cities and even some of our regional cities like Newcastle at the moment are becoming less affordable to live in. So how do we arrest that trend?
I think housing affordability is obviously a hot topic at the moment, and it's something that is tricky to solve. You know, one of the things that we found with creating livable cities in Australia, a report that was released last week was that, you know, many of the areas where the housing is actually cheaper, you know, the fringes of the cities, the affordability of those houses or the living affordability is actually quite poor. That we have people spending, you know, more than 30% of their income on housing costs. And I think what we need to do there is we need to look at, well, where are all of the expenditures in their daily lives, in terms of you know, the dependency that people in these outer suburbs have on cars. You know, there's something we could definitely do there in terms of providing improved public transport, and that obviously also, you know, provides health benefits. But in essence, you know, I think that this is something that we need to look at holistically across local government, state government, and federal government to see how we can we can fix housing affordability, and in particular fix it for the areas where the housing affordability stress is highest.
I guess, Jonathan, you mentioned sort of getting people out of cars if we can, and I guess that means how far we can we have to walk to get to many of those amenities, be at work, be at leisure. And there is what's known as a walkable distance, isn't there? And 20 minutes seems to be that magic number when it comes to walking. So if it's outside of that, it's not seen as very livable.
Yeah, so I think depending on the kind of service that we're talking about, you know, whether it be a public transport stop or a local supermarket or a local park, people are prepared to walk different distances. But one of the things that we found with transport in particular is that that, you know, people are prepared to walk, say, about 400 metres, which is a 5-minute walk to catch public transport, but that stop that they are accessing has to have a certain frequency. So it's no good only having a service once every hour. What we found was that people need to be within 400 metres of a public transport stop that's serviced every half hour in order for people to actually use that and incorporate that into their daily travel journeys.
Do you think governments on the whole are listening to these sorts of arguments, Jonathan? That, I mean, because it seems like we seem to get a lot less public transport options than more. Maybe that's just my perception of it, but it seems that we're not getting as much as we need.
So we recently completed a study of four of the major capital cities in Australia, so Sydney, Melbourne, Perth and Brisbane. And what we found there was that whilst the state governments had in place policies around access to public transport, there was only one state government, and that was actually the New South Wales state government, that actually mandated that those services should have a certain frequency. And we think that's really, really important. It also makes it harder to achieve. You know, obviously, the higher you raise the bar, the harder it is to actually meet those policy objectives. But what was quite interesting was when we compared the states that had the more ambitious targets, say in the case of Sydney, while at face value it was actually performing less well in terms of implementing that policy, when we actually looked at a consistent national measure, so we could do an apples with apples comparison, we found that some of the cities that had less ambitious targets, like Perth, for example, weren't actually doing as well as Sydney. So we really think that it's very important to set those ambitious targets around providing a high level of access to reasonable frequency public transport.
Well, the discussion will go on. I'm sure, Jonathan, there's a lot of push-pull factors for a lot of stakeholders, but thank you for sharing a little bit of that with us this morning.
No worries, Mark, and we're hoping very soon that we'll be able to expand our work and include Newcastle as well.
And when you've got some data, get back in contact with us, Jonathan. We'd love to know how livable we are, but we know we're a pretty livable place around here anyway.
Great. Thanks, Mark.
Good times. There he is, Senior Research Fellow from RMIT, Dr. Jonathan Arundel, giving us his take on what does constitute a livable city.